I'll tell thee what, though. Being an Arab will be thornier than you suppose. Harif.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Back for our 15th season. Yes, yes, you can't get rid of us. And especially now that we're absolutely loaded. Yes, we are coming live from the Persian Gulf, because we are now the official podcast of the Saudi Pro League. Yes, the Saudi Pro League kicks off this week. To much fanfare and with a host of stars, doesn't it, Terry?
Absolutely. It's going to be an absolute cavalcade of pure football played in an absolutely glorious environment. And I, for one, Graham, can't wait.
Jan, how's your yacht?
Well, I mean, you can see behind me, it's absolutely wonderful. I'm really loving it. And it's good to be able to, you know, move forward with our podcast without compromising any of our principles, which has always been core to the kind of ethos of what we've been doing.
I know, exactly. And of course, I mean, you've been very, very pleased about your brothers just up the coast there on the northeast as well now, because you're now intertwined now. I think Sunderland now are a part of the same group, aren't they? And they're playing in this league, aren't they?
I don't think they quite are, Grim, but I think personally, I think it would be a wonderful thing if they were to become part of the group, because I'm all in on Saudi football.
Yes, and we're going to be following the Saudi Pro League every week. Forget all the other stuff that we used to talk about. That stuff's out the window now, because we are here to help Saudi Arabia grow as a nation and become more understanding of what's going on outside in the broader world, aren't we, Terry?
You know, we play a vital role in making that connection between this brutally oppressive and murderous regime and the nice, fluffy, centrist politics of Western liberalism. And I'm totally here for it. And I've got the bank balance to prove it.
Yes, yes, indeed. No, listeners, that was all a big ruse. We're not. We're still here, still doing exactly the same stuff as we were. Yes, yeah, when it comes to like snapping up old has-beens with nothing much left to offer, they seem to have neglected us for a change. I don't know why they've done that. Maybe they've gone to the Ramble instead.
Oh, come on now. There's no need for that.
Yeah. So what can we be expecting for this season? Well, I mean, pretty much what happens every season, basically, you know. Teams come, teams go, and they play a load of games, and then they hand out a load of silverware to Manchester City at the end of it. Or do they? Is there something else to look forward to differently this season? I think so. I mean, everyone is so excited, aren't they? Jan, you must be brimming with excitement. Your team's already played.
They have.
Still buzzing?
Well, I was very excited, and then we went lost.
Ah.
But yeah, it's really exciting. It's Sunderland sold over 30,000 season tickets, so there's excitement amongst my brothers and sisters as well. So yeah, it's great. It's great. It's great to be back as well. And obviously the non-league season kicks off on Saturday as well, which I'll be trotting down to as well. So that'll be good.
Yes,
I've actually already got stuck into the non-league season, because down here in the Sussex land, the county level has already kicked off last week. I was up at Stenning last week watching Stenning versus Bexhill Town, or Bexhill United. I forget what it was. So yeah, the non-league season is actually underway here. I've been to my first regular season game already.
Well, it was a big weekend of extra preliminary round FA Cup action as well this weekend. So yeah, it feels like non-league is in full swing already. But we're going to go and talk a bit about our own clubs just to start off, because that seems like the thing to do at the start of the season. My club, Arsenal, were in action this weekend with a resounding, convincing win against Manchester City in the traditional curtain raiser. Yes, the traditional curtain was raised yesterday and Arsenal won for the third time in a row of being in the Community Shield final. They won on penalties after a 1-1 draw. And does this mean that they're going to go on and win the title? Well, of course it doesn't. But hey, it was fun to watch anyway. So that's what Arsenal are doing. But Terry, Palace, Roy got given the job, Wilf's gone, Luca's gone as well, and the captain. So much changing going on there?
Yeah, maybe with some more to go as well. I'm steadfastly trying to ignore the reports about Michael Olise possibly moving on. And I think of possibly greater concern is the thought that maybe Mark Guéhi might go too, who not much gets talked about Palace's defenders. But Anderson and Guéhi have developed over the last couple of seasons a very, very solid partnership. And I would hate to see that get broken up. So there's a lot of uncertainty. Obviously, yes, Zaha leaving. There was a brief moment when it looked like he might stay. There was all that business when he went into business with Stormzy to buy Croydon Athletic, which is a local non-league club quite close to Selhurst in nearby Thornton Heath. And you thought to yourself, well, I wonder whether or not that's part of a broader play and that maybe he'll stay here. And no, he went to Istanbul instead. And fair play to him, because apparently Istanbul is a beautiful city. But, you know, he's going at a point, you know, it's not like there's any faded glory about Zaha. Zaha was as effective as he's always been or has been for so many years. So, you know, if it was a case of him being 33, 34 and sort of like approaching the sunset of his career, you'd think, oh, well, okay, you can manage that. But, you know, this is a big loss to Crystal Palace and will be a big loss both in terms of the numbers and in terms of the dressing room. And also emotionally, I mean, Steve Parish said he was our greatest ever player. And I think in many, many ways, I think that's very true. I think he was our greatest ever player. And it's actually, when the more I think about it and reflect on it, it's really, really sad that he's gone.
Mm. Yeah, and Sunderland lost their first game of the season, but a couple of players coming in, and yeah, the signing of the summer. The newspapers were full of the Bellingham transfer, weren't they? It was all anyone could talk about was Bellingham's move, wasn't it? And yeah, he ended up at Sunderland, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, who saw that coming? And as well as that, I was quite surprised at the level of coverage that received. It was on every single back page. You know, it was sensational. Really good for the club.
Yeah.
And, you know, good for his profile as well. So, yeah, I was really pleased that Job Bellingham joined us from Birmingham at the tender age of 17. And he made his full debut yesterday. You know, it's easy to make comparisons with his brother, who was obviously the bigger move of the summer. But, you know, he's come from a really great academy and, you know, it kind of fits in with what we're trying to achieve, bringing talented young players in. And that got us to sixth last season, even though we had a host of injuries to deal with. Yeah, so he's in. We brought in, because obviously we had problems with strikers last season because Ross Stewart was injured and he continues to be so.
Yeah.
We didn't get Ellis Sims back. He returned to Everton. He's now at Coventry. Ahmed Diallo went back to Manchester United and I think they were like, no, I think he'll be playing at a higher level than in the Championship, which is fair enough because he's an absolute wizard and deserves to be doing some good things. The rest of the people that we've brought in, to be honest with you, well, they've all kind of all flying under the radar. So, that, for example, we brought in a player called Semedo, Luis Semedo from Benfica's B team. We brought in a player, Triantis, who joined from the A-League, Central Coast Mariners, and a player called Seelt, who is a defender from PSV under-21s. So the objective is to have a young, exciting team, and we'll blood the youngsters and go from there. But anybody who watched the game on Saturday will see that there's a lot to be done. We were playing against a team heavily tipped to go up this season, Ipswich, and you know, for large parts of that, they exposed our naivety. But we ultimately ended up playing quite well, and the stats actually were better for us. And it could be argued that their opening goal was a little bit lucky, but there obviously is a long way to go. But it's good to see that this ethos we've got about youth is that we're sticking to it. Although we did bring in somebody who's 29, but again, it's not going to drag up the average too much. Yeah, it was Bradley Dack. He came from Blackburn, obviously worked with Tony Mowbray before. So, we finished quite positively, with the exception of actually not going up. So I'm positive. I thought the result yesterday it's an opening day result. You know, with things we can move on, and I think with a young, exciting team, we'll do all right this season. Yeah,
you said Semedo coming in from Portugal. He's about 6'4", isn't he, for a 19-year-old or something like that? So he looks quite an exciting talent there as well. But yeah, opening day win, and as you say, Ipswich well tipped last season. I think they only lost 4 games out of 46 in League One. Coming up, scored over 100 goals. Also had one of the best defenses. So they look like they're going to do very well in the Championship this season. So tough start of the season, but it's a long way to go, and we all know how crazy the Championship is. Terry, what about Germany? What about Dortmund? Jan said about the actual Bellingham moving to Real Madrid. But I suppose Dortmund now have a load of money to go and spend in the market, and they've not lost anyone else, have they, of note?
No, they've not lost anyone of note, as you say. I mean, they've not brought in too many. They brought in Remy Benzebaini from Borussia Mönchengladbach, which was on the cards for some time, and Felix Mencha, which is something of a controversial signing, but we won't go into that. He's come in as a sort of Bellingham replacement, and I don't think you can really replace Bellingham. But I mean, you know, they've got the defensive midfield side of Bellingham's game covered with Mencha. He scored in the preseason friendly against Ajax yesterday and looks to be settling in very well. I mean, they're looking for another striker because I think they're just a little bit worried about Sebastian Haller's fitness. Obviously, Haller, prolific goal scorer in the Bundesliga, but still recovering from testicular cancer, and perhaps maybe thinking about trying to have somebody there who might be able to back him up, someone with a little bit more pedigree. So they're largely unchanged. And I think that Dortmund should feel relatively, you know, confident of giving the title challenge another go, especially if Bayern don't find ultimately a replacement for Robert Lewandowski, which they've been looking for over a season now for. So the narrative seems to be, oh, Bayern will pull their socks up and full season under Tuchel, and they'll, you know, they'll kick on. But they do have that hole at the top of their formation, which does need to be filled. So if they don't do that, then no, I think that there's a possibility of Dortmund challenging for a title again. So they've got every reason to be bullish, and they're certainly talking up their chances.
Okay, well, let's talk a bit about the transfers going in and out of the Bundesliga with the Premier League. And obviously, one of the biggest names is, and one of the most recent names is Gvardiol, who is now going to City. What can you tell our listeners about Gvardiol that they don't know already?
Well, I was going to say, if you watched the Men's World Cup last year, then you've seen Gvardiol playing for Croatia. A very, very solid, very fast, very accomplished and complete defender. I can't remember the exact figure that he's gone for, but it's at 21 years old. It's quite a keen price. But that Guardiola was on the telly the day before yesterday, as you're listening to this, saying, you know, he's that good. And obviously, you know, they can sell him on, that they felt that it was were worth the price that they paid from RB Leipzig. A big loss, I think, for Leipzig, one of a number of players that they've lost. And I would suggest a significant upgrade for Manchester City. If you watched him play for Croatia, you'll know how solid he was. It's obviously different with the World Cup, but I mean, he puts in, I would say, 8 out of 10 performances every week for Leipzig, and I think that's a terrific signing.
And Harry Kane to Bayern, is that actually going to happen?
Possibly, but well, you guys know full well what Daniel Levy is like, the chairman of Tottenham Hotspur. He likes to grandstand these kind of transfers. I think Bayern's problem is that they've now put in a bid, I think it's for 100 million euro. I think Levy's looking for 100 million pounds, which for a 30-year-old with a year left in his contract is, I think he's actually taking the piss. I think if I was Bayern, I'd back away from this because it's kind of making them look a bit foolish. And some of the German media is kind of looking at them saying, look, what are you doing? This is too much. How badly do you want him? This is not really what Bayern do. And because Bayern aren't used to having this kind of position with that they have with Tottenham, you know, whenever Bayern want to buy a player in a Bundesliga, for example, they just buy that player. Right? So they without too much rancor, you know, there might be a bit if it was a Dortmund player, but there's not too much rancor involved. But with, you know, I mean, Tottenham is just like all about the rancor, and Levy is all about the rancor, and he loves to gouge as much as he can. What Harry Kane thinks about all of this, I don't know, because he apparently is set to go. Kids have been over there, family's been over there, everyone's happy, wants to go to Bavaria, wants to move to Munich, quite happy to do this, sees this as an opportunity to go, which they might miss if he waits another season, because when his contract expires. And so how he feels about it, I don't know, because he's wisely keeping his mouth shut. But it's all feels as though Bayern are starting to lose a bit of face, which I don't think is wise. There's things going on in the background there. Like obviously the chief executive and then the sporting director were fired at the end of last season. They've had to bring in Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge back in to steady the ship. And this kind of thing can undermine confidence in the club. And in my opinion, what they should do is they should say, you know what, we're not going to play this game with you. we are going to back away from here, see if they can hijack the Randall Colomwani deal from Frankfurt to PSG, see if they can hijack that deal, or maybe the Victor Osimhen before he signs his contract with Napoli, perhaps, and get him in. Or just go without a number nine for another season. There's a good chance they'll win the Bundesliga, you know, without a number nine. They did it last year, so because Sadio Mane was a disaster. So, you know, I think that maybe that might be their best option and save some face. You know, best outcome would be wait till January, sign a pre-contract with Kane, and then Levy just looks like a numpty then because he's passed up on what would have been a fairly hefty transfer fee for a 30-year-old who's only got a year left in his contract. But anyway.
Yeah, yeah. How do you think it's going to pan out? Do you think Kane is going anywhere this season? Do you think Tottenham fans should be worried that he's going to go?
He should go, shouldn't he? I mean, it's an absolute golden opportunity to go to Bayern. I think I read earlier today that, just to your point, Terry, about losing face, that Bayern had put in a deadline, which Levy's going to do anything other than just ignore that, which exactly. is precisely what he did. I mean, it's not good for the player, I think, the longer this goes on, and Bayern need to be mindful of that because, will he, won't he, thing that's going on there is it's just going to be damaging for him because you're right, he's got wife, he's got children, you know, he wants to get his, and you've got to be in the right headspace if you're going to start a new season in a new club. And there might be a bit of resentment if he ends up staying as well. So what are Tottenham going to get out of this if he ends up staying there for another season? Because he's just going to be winding that down, trying to not get injured, knowing that he'll walk into any top club and do a good job for them, because he's still got a few years left in him, definitely. So I'm worried about the age thing too much, but you are right, sorry, that with a year left in his contract, you know, I'm not sure if they're playing this as canny as they think they are, Tottenham.
Well, yeah, and as well, with Postecoglou new in post as well, this is the last thing he needs in his opening season there, right?
Totally. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing what Ange Postecoglou does at Tottenham Hotspur. But it is going to be a massive blow for him if he has to lose his star striker. He's already obviously playing him in pre-season friendlies. Did he score a hat-trick yesterday over the weekend? I think, anyway, you know, not that that makes much of an odds. But, you know, he'll be making all his pre-season plans with Kane, and then he might then have to let him go. And this is not ideal for a guy who's just arrived, not just at Tottenham, but, you know, in the Premier League as well. Kind of gets him off the hook, I suppose, if Tottenham have a disappointing season. But at the same time, I doubt very much that's how Postecoglou sees it.
No.
You know, everywhere he's gone, he's won stuff. And he'll go into this project with an expectation that he'll be doing the same, and he won't be happy. And he's already said as much, that he just wants this to be resolved. And I wonder just to what extent, you know, this is part of Levy's sort of like game plan. You know, he has to be taking all of this into account. You know, at what point does he have to then blink and think, no, I've got to think about the squad. I've got to think about, you know, the new manager who I've just hired and how that's going to affect the season. But, you know, I hesitate to say he's a master of these kind of things, because I don't think ethically the way he goes about things is particularly good. I realize we're all talking about millionaires here, but, you know, these are human beings, and Kane has expressed a desire, and I think a reasonable desire given his service and the amount of time he's got left in his contract, to move to another club and pursue a different challenge. I don't think he's being unreasonable. In fact, I think Harry Kane could be dealing with this whole thing very well by just keeping his mouth shut, which is not something that he did when he was trying to go to City. If he's learnt his lesson, and he's just going to sit there and wait this out. But whether or not he'll be on Daniel Levy's Christmas list come the end of August depends on whether or not this thing comes through. But, you know, I stress, if I'm sitting in the Bayern boardroom at this point, I'm thinking, you know, we don't impose another deadline because that just looks pathetic. But we impose an internal deadline. This is not done by this day. We're backing out of this and pursuing other options, because Bundesliga season starts DFB podcast starts next week. So, and the Bundesliga is 2 weeks after that. So, you know, times are wasting.
Yeah. And I guess it really all depends on if those people who were tipping him to go to Bayern got that tip off the Tottenham owner himself, Joe Lewis. But I mean, I don't know, his tips are turning out to be a bit toxic at the moment.
Well, indeed. Yes. Yeah, so you're talking about the allegations of insider trading, which of course Joe Lewis strenuously denies.
He does indeed. He does indeed, yes. Yes, I don't think even being on a yacht in the Persian Gulf would save us from that.
No.
So, Jan, who do you think's got the tougher start then to their new job, Postecoglou or Pochettino?
That's an interesting one. Postecoglou, probably, because there's, you know, that is actually a very, very good question, Graham. because I was just about to say, you know, that we talked about Tottenham being a bin fire, but, you know, Chelsea gave them a really good run for their money on that, on the bin fire stakes, didn't they?
Yes.
if things are not going as well as you would like, I think Daniel Levy will just pull the trigger on Postecoglou. I don't think he'll hesitate with that. With Poch, you know, he was the most sought after manager in the world when they managed to sign him. So there's some goodwill there, but they really need to make sure that they just kind of hand over to him and his team so he can do what he needs to do. They need to trim the fat out of that squad. They signed lots of players for lots of money that weren't necessarily the players that the actual team needed. But he'll know what he needs to do. There's a cigarette paper between, which is the tougher job, really, isn't there? But I don't envy either of them. But I think with Poch and being at Chelsea and having the resources that he'll have at his disposal, I think there'll be an expectation that he delivers some silverware this season. So I think that's probably the difference between the two.
Yeah, they can't have a crazier season as they had last season. I mean, they just can't, can they? Can they?
Well, this is Chelsea we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, it's the gift that keeps on giving, isn't it?
I think they've made some very good signings. I know, yes. I think that there's a little bit more focus to their signing. I think that Nkunku is, obviously, that's the other Leipzig player who's left and has gone. I mean, he is a tremendous player. Nicholas Jackson as well, again, from Villarreal, probably won't be a frontline player, but that's going to be a handy signing. They'll score goals, Chelsea, which will certainly help, even if they don't necessarily get things knocked into shape. But Poch sets teams up well. He's well known for it. And also, he's used to working in madhouses. I mean, he was at PSG for a couple of years. He was at Tottenham for ages and actually made sense of Tottenham. Tottenham looked like a coherent project for a while, you know, 5 or 6 minutes, admittedly, but they did. So, you know, it's not like he needs calm and serenity, Poch. He's happy to go with the chaos and he's going to get it. But I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I think Ange has got a much, much tougher job.
Yes, I'd agree with you there. I mean, on paper, Pochettino's job should be easier. If you ignore all the crap that's been going on there for the last 2 years, then yeah, I think that should be the case. And Postecoglou there is just so many things going wrong at the moment for Tottenham. Every week there's something new that is something that will cause mess for them, not just now, but going forward. The whole losing your sporting director and then this thing that's going on with Joe Lewis as well and the transfer negotiation with Harry Kane. It all just piles up and it's all the sort of thing that if you're a fan of the club, then it's just a thing, well, when are we going to get some good news in? And there doesn't seem to be that much of that on the horizon. And it can't be that helpful when you see Arsenal buying all the players that they want to buy and spend all the money and looking forward to the season ahead and actually people putting them up as title contenders. Stranger things have happened.
That's going to go well, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, I remember this time last year, they weren't predicting Arsenal to get into the top five. So, yeah, who knows? If they get it horrendously wrong again, then, yeah, it could be a wild ride for Arsenal this season. We have talked a lot about what's going to happen this season. I haven't even asked you to make any wild predictions yet because I know that usually stumps you. So if you want to come up with wild predictions, now is the time because we're going to crack on and talk about the Women's World Cup in a minute. So any wild things that you want to come out with them right now. Terry?
No, I can't see beyond City winning the title in terms of that. So I don't think anything was going to happen. There's tons of stuff that we haven't talked about. I didn't really finish on my meditations about Crystal Palace, to be perfectly honest with you, I think that they will probably, unfortunately, this isn't a wild prediction at all. I think Palace will be fine this season because I think Palace are at a point where they're fine. Now, the act of predicting Palace being fine could be classed as a wild prediction. Because I usually like to predict down when it comes to Palace. I like to be pessimistic. But this time round, I'm not. I'm going to suggest actually, I mean, if Roy brings the same energy for the last 12 games of the season that he does for the entire season, then Palace are going to be great.
Yeah.
And if they can keep hold of, you know, I mean, they've got this new fella that they've signed from Brazil. And if they keep Eze, then, you know, mid-table beckons for Crystal Palace. It's going to be glorious. but yeah, no, you know, and I've said it now, so we can play this back at the end of the season. And when I'm looking forward to Crystal Palace versus Sunderland in the Championship. Sorry, Jan.
Jan, you got any wild predictions about football in the coming season?
So my sensible wild prediction is that Sunderland will qualify for the playoffs and may well go up, but you can play that back at the end of the season. Newcastle are going to win the league.
Yeah. Whoa.
And Luton will stay up. Premier League ones for you.
I like Luton staying up though. Yeah. That's a good prediction.
Luton staying up, I think, will be great. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the TV cameras down there for Premier League football in probably the worst football ground on earth, or certainly in the top tiers. So that's going to be great. I think it'd be brilliant if they stayed up. Because talk about an unfashionable club stinking up the Premier League. I think it's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. So them staying up would be great. I don't think Newcastle will win the league, but you never know.
There's going to be like TV companies, not in the UK, and like sponsors and stuff like that. And they're going to be looking at Luton and saying, what are they doing here? Like that time when Leicester qualified for the Champions League. Who are they and what are they doing here? Can you not just put Liverpool in instead?
I think the international feed is going to play on it. I think it's going to be like mad eccentric Englishisms here. It's like, this is what Luton are.
Luton, mad, yes. Eccentric, I suppose.
We're looking forward to seeing what happens there. I think they should go right back to the 80s. I think they should get the plastic pitch down. The travelling support should throw the seats on the pitch as well at every opportunity. I think
they should ban away fans and put in a plastic pitch.
Yeah.
Really, you realise that actually the reason why Luton got into the Premier League isn't because of Luton. It's karma for Watford for doing such a terrible job of running their football club that they now have to watch Luton play in the Premier League. That's what this is really about. This is just the football gods punishing Watford.
And with good cause as well. Right, as I promised, we are going to talk about the Women's World Cup because there's an actual football tournament going on right now. Well, not right now, because the great thing about this World Cup is it's like a regular World Cup, but here in the UK, you don't have to give it any headspace after lunchtime. You can just get on with your day. You may have to get up early a few times to watch it, but, a man of my age, I mean, I'm up at R5 anyway, so what's the problem there? Terry, it's been mad, hasn't it? It's been a great tournament, hasn't it?
It's been mad. It's been chaos. And it's been upside down. And for those of us who dip in and out of women's football, our outdated takes have been really shown up, frankly. Because obviously, if you're a day-to-day follower of the women's game, you will not be massively surprised by what's happened. I mean, you know, there have been surprising results, but you might look at this and say, yes, I can see that this is the way that the game has been developing. But if the last time you seriously watched a women's football matches was 2 years ago or last year for the Euros, like me, for example, then you'd likely go, oh, this is weird. But yeah, I mean, it's been fantastic. The quality of football obviously keeps getting better. The standard of professionalism, not quite the same thing, but the standard of professionalism clearly rising. And you can see the so-called emerging nations coming through largely because the game is professionalizing and internationalizing, with the exception of Canada and the United States, of course.
Yeah, the world champions and the Olympic champions are both out to go with the South American champions, Brazil, to go with the Asian champions, China, and to go with the African champions, South Africa as well. All of those champions are out. And England almost won out today, didn't they, Jan?
They did. I mean, Nigeria were immense today and they really did a number on England. And they quite literally took Lauren James out of the game, didn't they? Because she.
Yeah.
Obviously, they realised that she was going to be a great threat because she's a fantastic player. But she just was so frustrated, clearly. Obviously, this culminated, as listeners will know, in her being sent off. First stamping on an opposition player that had completely taken her out of the game. And I thought watching that game, England are going to lose this. I really did. But actually, they pulled together quite well after the sending off, I thought, and then realised that they had to go the hardest route. They had to kind of take it into extra time and ultimately into penalties. And I thought that they distinguished themselves on the penalties. I thought they were excellent. They didn't lose their head. And you could see some of the Nigeria players, you know, when you just see someone starting to take a run up and you're like, oh, you haven't got this right on your head. So I felt sorry for Nigeria because I think they did everything they could to beat England. They certainly did everything they could to kind of silence England and they didn't let them play their own way. It was a great game. Enjoyed it very much.
I think personally, Nigeria certainly did enough to nullify England. Whether they did enough to win the game, I think is debatable. Mary Earp's only made two saves, I think, in the whole of the 2 hours of play. which is fine. I mean, like, they were the underdogs going into this, and everything that they achieved is a triumph. But I think the whole thing about the fact that they were the better team, on balance, there wasn't a better team because neither side looked like they could win the game in the time. And you're right. Once Lauren James went off and England went back to a back four, Nigeria had pretty much no chance of entering the final third of England. And it really made me think that maybe Serena Wiegmann got her tactics wrong from the start, because it seemed that playing three at the back just seemed to play into Nigeria's hand. And just going back to a more conventional back four, it suited England and allowed them to see out the last half an hour. And once that happened, you almost thought that there's only one winner in this penalty shootout. I never really felt that anxious at all. When Chloe Kelly stepped up and did a crane kick at the end of it in the penalty shootout, I thought, you're just taking the piss here, aren't you?
Yeah, I thought that was probably the scariest free kick approach I've ever seen. I thought, what is that? But then I remembered it was Chloe Kelly and said, I'm, you know, never, ever doubt her judgment. And it was the wife said, what is that? Oh, who cares? Because yeah. With a split second later, she would just do what she likes. I agree with your assessment, Graham. I think it's nice. And I think it's kind to say that Nigeria were the better side because they surprised so many people by being as good as they are. And I think one thing that I have done in this World Cup is learn very quickly to not be, you know, surprised by anything. And I thought Nigeria have played very well throughout the entire tournament, and no one should be at all surprised that they played well against England. You're right. I mean, I think they made some interesting judgments, particularly in the final third. You know, a couple of overhead kicks that I think could possibly have been headers, which maybe might have resulted in a goal or certainly in more saves. I think also that Serena Wiegmann, I think she was on a hiding to nothing. I think if she'd gone with a flat back four, she would have invited Nigeria to come more at them, which I don't think would have been particularly useful. I think playing with the flat three meant that they had to deal more with the Nigerian press, which I think was a real problem for them. But actually what we saw was a really even game of football. And yeah, the difference maker in the game in many ways was Ayindi, who was the player who was charged with looking after Lauren James. She wasn't the player who was fouled. She was the player who was looking after Laura. She was a rare moment of not being in, you know, within, you know, a meter of Lauren James. And it worked spectacularly well. Lauren James is an inexperienced player. And so it's not surprising when a young player gets looked after in that way. We do see that in professional football. And you just have to, but it worked so well because, of course, James just lost her rag and well, that's the kind of thing that that's just bonus if you're the opposition, isn't it? So, yeah. Well, you know, the best you can do is basically just like mark her out of the game and she does nothing. Even best case scenario, cherry on the top, is they do something stupid and get sent off. And that's exactly what happened. So it was an even game of football, which I think was destined to finish 0-0. I think it's just when it comes to the penalty shootout, that's the difference when you've got a professionalized, highly resourced federation who are able to spend a great deal of time, even by men's standards, you know, it's not, and that sounds funny, but by women's football standards, England are well funded, and they spend time and can spend time. They've got an energy working on the finer details of winning football matches, like penalty shootouts, and they had a technique. You know, sometimes it didn't work, but most of the time it did. And Nigeria didn't, and I think that's the difference. But that was the difference between the two sides, was just the ever so slightly greater professionalism. In terms of their preparation. And that's what carried the day. But I completely sympathize with anybody who feels that Nigeria were the better team. But I wouldn't necessarily share that. I think that it was even Stevens.
Yeah.
Or even Stephanie, if I may.
Yeah. And a lot of people are drawing parallels with Lauren James getting sent off, with David Beckham getting sent off against Argentina. The game situation and the fact that England went into this game against Nigeria's clear favourites, notwithstanding. So, yeah. Are they helpful, those sort of comparisons, or not? Yeah, it's similar. Someone got sent off in a round of 16 game in a World Cup, and that's pretty much it, isn't it? Really?
Well, it didn't cost them the game. Ultimately, it was silly. Hopefully, it'll only be a one match ban, but there's a chance it could go up to three because it was violent conduct. But let's see what happens on that one. But I think that that squad of players are so together. I don't think they will let there be any kind of issue amongst the squad. Obviously, it's different the way that people watch football in the women's game. And you haven't got this trying to sell newspapers based on bad opinions and stirring up trouble. So I don't think that it's going to suffer she'll suffer the same fallout for many reasons, that being the only one I can pluck from my tiny mind.
No, you're not expecting Jason Cundy to go off on a diatribe on TalkSport about Lauren James and about how she's let the country down.
No, not at all. Not at all. And even if they'd lost, I don't think that would have happened. I really don't.
Terry, is that what the women's game is missing?
Jason Cundy slagging them off. This is why I really feel it would be helpful if the women's game sort of like diverged from the men's game as much as possible, because we really don't need that kind of narrative in there. All I would add about Lauren James is it is quite funny in a way, because obviously she does have a reputation for being quite sort of like demure and very shy and inward and somewhat introverted. But, you know, we saw a side of her that, you know, maybe we need to see. And like, I'm sure Emma Hayes has already given her opinion. Emma Hayes is Lauren James's club coach at Chelsea. But I wonder if deep down she might think, well, you know, sooner or later we were going to see something like that from her. Maybe it's better that it's happened now rather than later. And on that, I mean, you know, unlike the men's team, the Chelsea Women's Club is an extremely well put together, efficient outfit. So she'll be looked after, and she's got an outstanding coach who'll look after her and mentor her. So I don't think that this is going to have any far reaching implication on Lauren James's career. If anything, I think she'll grow from it. And the main thing is no one got hurt. And from an England point of view, we went through to the next round anyway, so it's kind of all good. It's rough that she'll miss the rest of the tournament. There's no way they're not. If they don't upgrade that to free games, then what's going on? I'm sorry, but I've got to take my English hat off there. But that's dodgy if they don't. They've got to make that free game. That's clear violent contact. It's out of order.
Yes, utterly out of order. But of course, England into the quarterfinals now, which take place at the end of this week. So by the time we come back to record a podcast next weekend, we'll be preparing for the semi-finals. Well, now you've been completely immersed yourself here, Terry, with the whole tournament. Who do you think is going to make up the semi-finals?
Despite the fact that their federation is in disarray and I don't think they've got the right coach, I think Spain are just possibly better than everyone else, despite themselves.
Uh-huh.
Spain are frighteningly good. Even though they got hammered by Japan, I think Spain have got better. So I'm saying Spain, I'm saying Japan, and I'm going to say England.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to say Australia. Am I reading the wall chart right there?
You are reading the wall chart there. Yeah. You're saying Australia are going to get the better of probably France.
I am. That's probably my most vibey prediction.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm basing that on yeah, no, I'm actually basing that
vibes.
On vibes.
Vibes is perfectly good.
I think France will grow. I've been disappointed with France this season. Not angry, just disappointed. and you know, I also, but largely because I feel like a bit of an idiot because I'm such a massive Renard stan that I now feel as though he's let me down by making me look foolish. So it's a bit childish, really. But that said, I mean, I think France have the players and the pedigree to grow into a tournament, and I think will be dangerous. And they're not going to have the slightest issue, I think, playing, you know, against home teams and stuff like that. But, you know, I didn't watch too much the Australia-Denmark game because I really had to do some kind of work today and I was a bit emotionally spent after the England game. But I thought Australia put in a pretty healthy performance there, and I think that they're good for a semi-final place.
Well, you may not watch much of the Australia-Denmark game, but someone did, and that someone was Gary Andrews. So let's hear what he had to say about the game.
10 days ago, the conversation in Australian football was, would Tony Gustavsson keep his job? Tonight, after a very, very thorough dismantling of a very good Denmark side, is he able to take them all the way? Australia has, I think, been fair to say, on Sam Kerr calf watch for the last few weeks as she injured her calf on the eve of the tournament. And she tonight came back for the last 10 minutes, didn't really do anything of note, but just her presence there lifted the crowd. By that point, though, Australia were home and host. Hayley Raso, who had an excellent game, put in a really, really strong shift, very physical as well, capped it off with the winner. Caitlin Ford's opener was a really magnificent goal. Great bit of interplay between her and Mary Fowler, who has really come into her own since having to take on that striker role in the absence of Sam Kerr. And those two combined, fantastic effect for Ford's slot home for Australia's opener. Denmark definitely gave them a lot of problems. If anything, I actually think this was potentially a more impressive performance than the match against Canada, where they came out with the point to prove and really blew the Canadians away. And Canada obviously have had their well-documented issues in the run-up. Tonight, what we really saw from Australia was a very professional team that looked well-drilled, well-organised and confident and capable in repelling attacks from what is a really good Danish team. Pernille Harder especially showed why she was once the most valuable women's player in the world. Her play between the lines was superb. And perhaps another game she might have found a way through, but Mackenzie Arnold had a fantastic game in goal. Claire Hunt and Alana Kennedy looked incredibly strong at the back. And really it just added up to a team that actually looks like they believe that they can win. Whereas a couple of weeks ago, you know, Australia opened in a relatively similar time of the game against Nigeria and then really fell apart. We've obviously seen Nigeria gave England a real scare earlier tonight as well. But what I think you can really take from this game is that Australia have got the confidence now. They found a system that works for them, with Fowler playing as the false nine and Ford cutting in from the left, while you've got Hayley Raso doing some fantastic work down the right. And with Sam Kerr coming back into fitness as well, suddenly they look a lot more of a daunting prospect than they did against Nigeria, where there was no Fowler, there was no Kerr. And there was certainly a lot of pre-match jitters that really carried through to the game itself. So I think there's certainly semi-finals would have been a must really for Australia coming into this tournament. I think that's the minimum expectation. And it's definitely achievable if tonight is anything to go by.
Gary Andrews there with the pitch side report there. Well, it wasn't really a pitch side. He must have done it when he got home. But anyway, that's a good roundup of where Australia are. I think they're actually emerging into this. It's very nice when the host nation does well. But yeah, we've always said host nations always should go out the quarterfinals, shouldn't they? They shouldn't really stick around for the semifinals. It's lovely and everything. Welcome to our home and everything like that. England made this mistake at the Euros last year and when they went on to win it. It is embarrassing. What sort of host are you if you don't go out the quarterfinals?
Where are my manners?
Yes.
Exactly.
I appear to have eaten all the cake. Where are my manners?
I mean, there should be actual... I mean, you shouldn't have to put rules in that because it's kind of expected, isn't it? You shouldn't have to.
No, of course.
Look, we're all adults here. We shouldn't have to treat you like children. You know, it's the quarterfinals, so off you go.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's how it should work. But, of course, the quarterfinals are coming up this weekend and they will feature in our box set. Yes, it's back for another season. Yes, of course it is. We'll have both of the quarterfinals that will be on Saturday morning. That'll be England's quarterfinal, which will be the later one starting at 11:30. We don't know who we're going to be playing yet. Will it be Colombia? Will it be Jamaica? But yes, that will be the later one. And then earlier, Australia will kick off, I think, 8:00 on Saturday against either France or Morocco. But what else? Well, we've got a few big fixtures coming in the Premier League. Burnley, Man City, Jan. Vincent Kompany bringing Burnley up. Are they going straight back down again?
They're not going to beat City. No. That's for sure. Actually, that's a really interesting game. That I think that, you know, they've come off the back of a brilliant season, Burnley. So I think, you know, there may be a result in that for them.
Yeah, Terry. Unai Emery takes his Aston Villa side to Newcastle, a tip to be the champions this year. But will Emery come home with 3 points from the Northeast?
Well, you know, I mean, the champions elect really do have to start from day one here, don't they? That's going to be a tough one for the champions elect because Aston Villa have made some very canny signings. And we're all looking forward to seeing what Villa can do with the full season under Unai Emery, who is a top class coach. So that's going to be a really interesting opening day fixture. And of course, we all know what Newcastle have been doing and what they continue to do. So, and obviously, you know, we're all here for it. We're all absolutely delighted for them in our new roles as ambassadors for the Saudi Pro League, which of course kicks off. I'm surprised none of these games are in the box set, actually, but I'm sure that's just an oversight.
Yeah, it is kind of, because it does kick off on Friday, but I'm now looking down at live football on TV and there doesn't seem to be anyone who's picked it up, but that's purely an oversight, I think, on this website's part, I think.
In that case, listeners, I can formally announce that the Saudi Pro League will be streamed live on the Sound of Football's YouTube page.
Get ready to tune in.
With watch-alongs.
Well, hang on. I mean, let's face it. I mean, like, we've got an opportunity here to branch out. I think we could be doing a lot of content around the Saudi Pro League this season.
Well, you know, His Highness, you know, has paid us generously to do this. So, you know, I kind of hope we don't want to find ourselves in the, you know, the wrong end of the car, you know, do we, at the end of the season when it comes to performance reviews?
Well, listeners, if someone does manage to pick up the Saudi Pro League, then obviously this weekend box set is likely to change quite radically. But if you want to see what does go in this weekend's box set, then get along to sofpodcast.com. Click on the link for the weekend box set and subscribe. All you need to do is put your email address in there because it's a weekly email. That's how it works. It's a weekly email, like all those newsletters you don't read that go into your inbox every other day or so. No, this one comes into your inbox on a Friday, and read it because it's full of all the little nuggets and all the games you should be watching from Friday to Sunday. But that is all we have time for this week. We've probably given you a little taste of what we're going to be talking about for at least for the next couple of months or so anyway. But for now, from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @SoundOfFootball, or on facebook.com/SoundOfFootball.
I do like the idea of doing watch-alongs, actually, not for the Saudi Pro League, obviously. That was a joke. But, you know, what? I think watch-alongs are things that we might have fun doing at some point in the future.
Yes.
Maybe of an evening during the Champions League rather than a weekend when we could be watching actual football.
Yes. Or maybe Conference League or something like that.
Oh, Conference League watch along. Sound of Football Conference League watch along. Yeah, I quite like the idea of doing that.
So a watch along is literally us watching football and talking about it.
Yes. Sound of Football boys reacting to, you know.
That's a great idea.
And then we have to give a thumbnail of us going, and we get big numbers off of it. Guaranteed success. That's what the YouTubers tell me. Guaranteed success. It's all about the thumbnails.
And then we can do some other stuff like, Jan, you can open up some boxes or something like that. And
yeah, it's a good idea. I can do that.
I mean, I might be up for doing a mindfulness meditation session during like a National League game on a Sunday afternoon or something like that. How about that?
Oh, or else I could do some ASMR with my beard.
Ooh.